Hello everybody, welcome to the NRF1 podcast E249, the Germany review and Hungary preview. We're going to do it all in one this week. You are here with me, Rich. It makes a nice change, hosting duties, which is good, but okay, you know, rest assured, Michael is here next to me. Not just Michael, sports journalist Michael Bailey. I think that's still his title.
Just about. Hello.
Hello, good evening. And we're also joined by, I can't remember all of Michael's intro bits, so I'm going to make one up because it's all different and we might get a photo for social medias, I'm not sure. But we're going to call him the Blonde Bomber, Callum Springle.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing, Callum?
Yeah, all right.
All right. And how's the hair doing? It's new.
Yeah, it's blonde.
Yeah, no, we do need to get to the bottom of this, because what is this hair and what's with the shirt? It's really exciting. We're going to take a picture. It looks beautiful, but just let us know what it is.
Well, I went to Manchester a few weeks ago and ended up bleaching my hair, hence why it's blonde. It doesn't just go like this in the sun. Even though we've been basking in 30-degree heat and I've been sat in an office for the last week, so... And the shirt is, funnily enough, also from Manchester, from thrift shop. So this is one of two that I got for a tenner.
Awesome.
That's not bad. Two for a tenner. Bargain. And we also have Callum's brother, Dan, with us, the Williams Advanced Technologies or something, is it?
Advanced Engineering.
Advanced Engineering, I was nearly right.
Saviour.
And I think possibly drinks could be on Dan for that. So, yeah, did you enjoy the weekend?
Yeah, a little bit frustrated. Strategy calls probably weren't the best, but still can't complain at a point. Given that what's Michael's face?
We should just point out, the reason I'm not hosting this is, apart from Rich giving him a go and he's going to be brilliant, I haven't seen a jot of this weekend, and you've just said William's got a point. What the f***?
Well, yeah, because so with the 7 crashes.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh my god. No, everyone knows it. We'll have to tell me later. Get on with it.
Whatever. The only way I'd have loved to watch that. Go on. Go on, dude.
Yeah, can't complain at a point for Bobby K, so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, that was a brilliant story. So, before we get fully
George
into that...
Russell didn't get the point. Oh, my Lord. Carry on.
The one time he balls his something up and he misses out on the point. So, that tells you everything you need to know.
See, all this drama, and we're only on the brink of things as well. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot to talk about.
To quote Peter Kay, this is tip of iceberg.
I'm just going to go and watch it. I'm not going to sit here and listen to you guys. No, carry on.
But no, it was a brilliant race. Where should we start in Germany? Any suggestions of where to start? Probably the beginning?
Yeah, that might help.
The beginning might help. So, quite an incredible race. One, we should also say, by Max Verstappen. He had a good race, but for him and his teammate Gasly, the start was something strange. They both seemed to just not have any grip and go backwards through the field. You know, I mean, as an advanced engineering guy yourself, can you any answers?
Well, I think the start is perhaps a tale of two stories, one being Red Bull and the other being Alfa Romeo. So I guess starting with Red Bull, perhaps some more high profile at the start. Yeah, something to do with their control system. So I don't know quite what went wrong, but everyone else seemed to do fine. Perhaps they've just got a bit too much lead in the right foot of both their drivers.
Yeah, we were surprised, and the Red Bull did seem to be lacking quite a lot of rear grip throughout the race. There were several moments where Verstappen, well, I mean, everyone was going sideways, but Verstappen especially had a couple of moments around the hairpins. But yeah, you also mentioned Alfa Romeo. They obviously got, both their drivers got good points finishes, then both got, I think, was it 30 second penalties in total or something like that, for some misdemeanour at the start with the clutch, I gather. But I don't know.
Yeah, I guess like a quick explainer that both Alfa Romeos got disqualified. Well, not disqualified, sorry. They got a 30 second time penalty. Which was basically because when the driver puts the foot down and then releases the clutch, it's a torque demand from the driver, so he wants so much acceleration and Alfa have been accused of sort of implementing a fake traction control system, so that it took them, I think it was about 4 or 5 times longer to build up the torque demands that the driver wanted at the clutch than is currently legal, which is 70 milliseconds. So they both got a 10-second stop and go, which was converted into 30 seconds, which dropped them both from 7th and 8th out of the points.
Wow. I mean, there's been a lot of people having a bit of a go at the stewards recently for their decisions, but when you explain it like that, I'm glad I'm not a steward because I had no idea what any of that meant. But what did you make of the start, Callum? It was obviously quite a lot happened, and like we said, with Red Bull and Alfa Romeo, what did you make of it all?
Well, it's like starts of Verstappen's ace in the pack now, but yeah, to be honest, I can't really find any way of explaining it other than potentially there's just too much of Verstappen and Gasly were asking too much of the tyres or something like that, but obviously it's not really affected them, not in Verstappen's case, but with Gasly there's other stuff going on underneath clearly.
Yeah, I mean, Verstappen really did have a great drive through the field. Obviously, there was a lot going on. And then, obviously, after the start, it wasn't long till we had the first safety car, really. I think it was Sergio Perez who had a spin in wet conditions. But, I mean, going back before all of the start and everything, the formation lap, which was the really weird thing, which we hadn't even mentioned, which probably should have said that first, to be honest. And this is going to be another shock for Michael. I'm waiting for this reaction. But there was 6 or 7 formation laps, wasn't there, in total? Was it only three? It seemed like that went on forever. Okay. But there was 3 formation laps, and that was just to get the drivers used to the tyres or something, was it?
I think it's just a more modern interpretation of the old way of doing it, which was to put the safety car out from the start and then have a rolling start.
This because it was wet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because someone was complaining about the fact they were drying up the track because they clearly wanted them just to go for it, and but I guess it was really wet.
Yeah, well, there were still bits of standing water around the track, so I guess from that point of view you can kind of see why they did it, especially considering that 4 laps into the race Perez was pointing the wrong way because of standing water.
Yeah.
But for a lot of the track it was fine, but the thing is that still, from a safety perspective, they've taken the right decision. From the standpoint of creating a good show, they made the right decision in going for a standing start.
Yeah, that standing start has always been something. When you look at wet races, and I mean, you know, we've seen it several times in Brazil, for example, the standing start is always the one that is exhilarating. I mean, with how some of the races have been this season, that's been the entertainment, the standing start. So it's credit to them that they got it on and they did that. And we had a full race distance as well, which was obviously a bonus, and didn't get stuck behind the safety car.
It was chopped down by 3 laps.
Yeah.
It's normally 67, but then they knocked off the remainder from the formation laps, as it were.
And imagine with those extra 3 laps, what could have happened, you know, if we had those at the end of the race? We could have seen all sorts of chaos.
Halfway through, I was kind of thinking, oh, it was a bit of a shame they knocked off those last 3, because I would have loved a bit of extra action, so...
Yeah, Williams could have possibly got more points, you never know.
What?
We'll get onto that later on.
Definitely.
Can I just say, obviously I have no idea what's happened, but wet race, Max Verstappen, and there was obviously a debate before this race or the weekend before, can't remember, saying, you know, actually Lewis Hamilton isn't the best driver on the grid, Max Verstappen is, and he does just have this knack of when there's an opportunity he wins a race. I don't know that it's not very often, unless Ocon's running him off the track, that he doesn't win a race when he's got a chance to. And again, like today, if something goes wrong, you can almost guarantee Max Verstappen is going to be the one who wins the race. So is he the best driver on the grid? I suppose that's a question for you, Callum.
I'd say at the minute he probably is. If he's not the best outright, he's probably the most reliable and the one that you can rely on the most, because you contrast it to Hamilton. He's made a series of usually small errors that have cost him a few points here and there, but then he's had races like this one that's come along, and in Austria where I think he had a bit of damage to the front wing, couldn't even cope with it, where it's cost him podiums and wins and, you know, the big points hauls that you'd be expecting him to get. whereas Verstappen's consistently been, I think for the last 20 races, he's been in the top five. He's never been outside of that, even with someone like Ricciardo as his teammate. So it's still sort of a quite a commanding level of consistency that you can't exactly sniff at.
No, it's a very good point as well, because Verstappen, that's his second race win in the last three races, and his season has really come alive. And for Honda as well, as the engine providers, I mean, you know, Renault and McLaren both off the podium this weekend. Okay, McLaren had a decent fifth place finish. It's great for them.
That's good.
Yeah, considering that Sainz was half in the barrier after more or less halfway, I think it was.
Yeah, that's, he was. Yeah, he had a bit of a moment. And, of course, I mean, Renault arguably could have been on for a podium with Hülkenberg. But then he obviously had what seemed quite a reoccurring accident that we saw several times during the race. Was there three or four drivers who went off in the same place, pretty much?
Well, it was, yeah, it was Hülkenberg, Leclerc, Hamilton, Sainz. Yeah. So they're all going off on that one where the drag strip starts, and the second to last corner. I think I even saw Leclerc was sort of saying it's ridiculous that this runoff was so slippery. It's almost kind of well, what do you expect? It's wet whilst the track itself is ever so slightly damp, and the drag strip is p***ing wet. What do you expect? You're on slick tyres. You're not going to get any grip.
No, and that seems to be something as well. This could be an unfair kind of observation that I've made, but we saw in Silverstone, it wasn't during the race, but Norris was driving, was it Johnny Herbert, round in one of the McLaren road cars, and he had a bit of a spin as he was drifting, ended up in the gravel, and he to get out of the gravel, he floored it, obviously dug a hole and beached the car. Now, I remember watching F1 in the 90s, and I remember people going off, and Murray Walker saying, and Martin Brundle as well, don't spin the wheels, you're going to dig a hole, you beat yourself. And we saw Lando do that. And then we saw Leclerc go off, have his crash, kind of scrape the barriers. The car didn't seem to be too badly damaged. There might have been, a bit of damage there. But he seemed to kind of try and spin the wheels up to get out of the little bit of gravel that was there as well. And he seemed to just beach himself. Now, do you think the way that modern circuits are with all the tarmac runoff areas, and if there's not that, the grass, do you think some of the newer drivers, the younger drivers on the grid, don't necessarily know how to get out of gravel? Or is that an unfair suggestion?
I think that's sort of common knowledge as racing drivers. That's just what you learn about. But if you're going to put it down to anything, it would probably be a mix of age and experience. Because, 2 or 3 weeks ago in Silverstone, there was Vettel than Verstappen going into the gravel. When Verstappen could have easily beached himself, he didn't. And he's obviously up there with the best and getting there with the most experience as well, even at his age. And Vettel's been there and done that.
There was also Bottas in practice as well. Went off at the Sachs curve and managed to get himself out of the gravel trap as well. So, yeah, I think a mixture of a bit of experience with perhaps some age is not necessarily a bad thing in this case. But, yeah, it's also a function of, I guess, ride height of the car and momentum, how deep the gravel is, and what track you're at, really. They all tend to vary. I know Silverstone's gravel traps are quite deep from walking through them myself, so yeah.
We should just say there are loads of ways to get in touch with us here at the NRF1 podcast, but the best place to start is patreon.com/NRF1, where you'll find all the latest posts, videos, F1 analysis, bonus podcasts, and plenty more besides. That address, patreon.com/NRF1, or download the Patreon app and then you can find us on there. And of course, there's all the usual places on social media. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The handle for all three is @thenrf1. You also find a link to our Facebook group via the page. And we always love getting emails, and we read them all, we promise. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And the website as well, if you want to go on there, it has all the information on nrf1.uk. And I'm sure if you just Google the NRF1 podcast, you'll find everything there as well. So, yeah, that's the easy answer. Okay, so into the next bit. I think we will fire up the NRF1 pit stops. And it does that whole thing.
Okay, ready up.
Right, first stop in the pit lane, and it actually is the first stop in the pit lane.
It'll be the only stop.
Mercedes. Where should we start with Mercedes? Where, Callum, what would you say is the best starting place?
From the start, preferably.
Go for it.
Good, quite good, a little bit less good, a bit better again. Even worse a minute later. Then lots of carbon fibre and threats of giving up, lucking into a couple
Lewis.
Of points.
Yeah,
that's about it, really.
That's pretty much summed up Mercedes' whole race. Right, moving on. No. No. I think one of the things to bring up first was, let's say, the celebration weekend for Mercedes. 125 years they're celebrating in motorsport. They had a car which was white at the front and silver as it went down. My missus described it as like when you start a scratch card but you stop halfway because you know you haven't won. Which, just, I was laughing all day about that. And there was a lot of other descriptions going around on the internet. I can't even think of any off the top of my head, but there was all sorts of descriptions. And then, of course, the team were dressing up in their kind of 1950s overalls and everything.
Not all of them. I did see that.
Not all of them, no.
Lewis,
some of them
was double denim, I think.
he had some special gloves. I don't know what for, but he was shouting about how they wouldn't work. And, yeah, it was a big celebration for the Mercedes team. It should have been a good weekend. You know, they had a first and third on the starting grid, and then in the end they didn't have any podium, so it all kind of went wrong. What was going on?
Well, yeah, where to start? I mean, they're doing everything right, and then just in the middle of nowhere Hamilton drops it, then the pit crew have an absolute nightmare.
What was going on? It seemed to me they're having all this fun dressing up and being all jolly, and then it's just like, wait a second, you've still got a job to do. There was people standing there, they couldn't find intermediate tyres, there was no one there ready with the little Allen key thing to take the wing off. It's like, this is a professional team getting paid a lot of money. It's, you can't expect that from the top team, can you?
Well, given that Hamilton went off at the penultimate corner, then somehow managed to peel into the pit lane and not go around the bollard like he should have done, and that bollard was there because of him last year. Yet he still didn't get the penalty.
No?
No.
He got 5 seconds added on, didn't he? I think.
I don't think it was for that, though, was it?
He did.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the going too slowly under the safety car was an anomaly, yeah. Supposedly.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that. Yeah, so he came into the pits completely unannounced, and there's no evidence that I've seen that he went on the radio and said, I'm coming in. So he just appeared, and the mechanics were like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Because the guys were in place with the wheel guns, but there was no wheels to put on, and yeah. Obviously they took them off, and then there was no guys. There was a guy who just kind of knelt down. I was like, I'll just hold the front wing, waiting for someone to come and undo it. And then there was people running around, and then there was just obviously Toto Wolff punching his desk in the background, and it was just confusion everywhere. I don't know what was going on. It was crazy. And I mean, obviously, like you say, it was a very late call to come into the pits, and he was standing still. I think it was 50 second pit stop standing time of 50 seconds, and that hasn't been seen for a long time, I don't think. This must have been the longest. Yeah, as Red Bull set a record breaking pit stop, Mercedes probably set a record breaking slowest pit stop or something.
Yeah, well, I guess for where they've gone wrong, you have to start with the drivers, because ultimately they've both their own races, both to quite hilarious extents.
Yeah, there was also, after, you know, Hamilton went back out, going into turn one, himself and Bottas both had very similar incidents where they kind of turned in. I don't know if they just got on the white line or the curb where it was wet or something. But they just both completely spun round, and I mean, Hamilton was lucky not to hit the wall. Bottas absolutely launched into the wall. yeah, obviously didn't go their way. But very similar accidents, and of course Hamilton then had to try and do a big recovery job, and he still, you know, really struggled on the tyres. He was still spinning about a bit.
Pretty much. I suppose from what I can remember with Bottas' incident, he did get a little bit of curb. I don't know whether he was getting the same amount or whether he was just taking too much speed. It was potentially the latter, because he couldn't even catch Stroll. And naturally, when the incentive is there to go and get a podium, then especially in a race that he would feel he should have won, that's the only thing that he's really going to do. And he's probably, I would say, if nothing else, has just gone in a bit too hard and overdriven it.
And there was a lot of stories on, I think, BBC Sport and things. There were, I think BBC said it was Hamilton's worst performance of all time. And it's like, well, I'm not quite sure about that. I'm sure we've seen worse. And there seemed to be quite a lot of people slamming him, especially because he made a mistake. But it's kind of like, well, yes, he's made a mistake. Arguably, a lot of people say you don't often see them. I mean, I think you see mistakes all the time from Formula 1 drivers. And in this race, was there one driver who didn't have a mistake? They all had their moments spinning and losing the rear end, going off track and everything. It's a wet race. You expect it, don't you?
Yeah, and there are key moments where you need to keep control of the car. One of them being, as we found time and again, is at that corner. Or at the second to last corner specifically. And also at the first corner, because you've not got a hell of a lot of runoff, and that's one of the fastest places on the circuit. So out of the two places to make mistakes, those are probably the two worst. The only one being any worse is probably the Sachs curve. So while others have made their own mistakes, so Verstappen coming into the stadium section doing the 360, for example, it's almost like picking your moments when you're going to have those mistakes and choosing when you're going to take that extra 0.1% and when you're not. In Hamilton's case and Bottas's case, they've probably taken that extra 0.1% in the wrong places.
But what a great joy it was to have a complete change of racing and to see three different guys on the podium. Well, at least probably one other who hasn't been on the podium for a long time, Danny Kvyat, but we'll get onto that later on.
What? Can I just... Oh, God. I was just going to say that it strikes me... I thought it was a great point And again, I haven't watched any of this race, by the way. But it was a great point in terms of them all getting distracted by all the stuff with their home race and all this, that and the other. Because they've had it so easy this season. I mean, like, we were all just assuming they're going to win the Constructors and Lewis will win the Drivers' Championship and that's it. I think you get to a certain point where that just seeps in a little bit, and that's what that will be. So that makes Hungary really interesting, because Hungary is the point at which they go, hell, we didn't have cock that up. Let's make sure that we are bang on it when it comes around to Hungary, because we don't want to head into the summer break off the back of two races where we've just gone a bit too lally and got a bit lost of focus. That said, if they can't pull it round, then that does raise some serious question marks about in terms of momentum and reeling it in and keeping a proper control of where their season's heading. So it's actually a really important weekend for them coming up, given if, as again, without actually seeing it, it's kind of unravelled. And as Callum says, it's kind of led by the driver in that, but it is kind of contagious as well. And if the person in the cockpit isn't really delivering and on it, then that soon spreads to everyone else, and it's sometimes a little bit difficult to arrest it, and they're not going to have much time to think about it, because it's obviously back-to-back races as well.
Absolutely.
It does also feel like the two teams behind them are actually catching up slightly, because in the last couple of weekends, Ferrari have looked as though over a lap they've been pretty close or matching or slightly ahead even going into qualifying, and even at Hockenheim, when Hamilton supposedly had a stonker of a lap, Verstappen was 0.3 behind when he barely even has a quali mode. But what I was going to say beforehand was whether or not anyone actually knows when was the last time that Honda had two cars on the podium.
This is a genuine question.
I would imagine 2006 season, possibly, but
2004.
I would imagine.
But you're all wrong. Right. So it was Estoril in 1992.
Oh, that's a great stat. Great stat.
That's incredible. I was expecting Takuma Sato's name to pop up or something, but
who was it on the podium?
Gerhard Berger and Ayrton Senna.
Don't you love that?
Of course. That makes sense. Or maybe Honda on for a big resurgence.
He may have changed his hair colour, but he's still looking bright.
Arguably brighter now.
Okay, so as is Formula One these days, that was our one singular pit stop, our one stop pod, shall we say?
Yeah. What we'll do now, I'll just cut in, Rich, because what we're doing, as people will know, we're back to back races. As another, it's very busy on the train line today, Rich. You're keeping it together, which is impressive. Given it is so exciting. What we'll do is we're back-to-back races. We put the full podcast out for our patrons over at patreon.com/nrf1. So you'll get the full load. If you're listening on Audioboom or your free Spreaker, Stitcher, all those guys, you're getting a slightly abridged version as it's back-to-back races. If you want to listen to the full one, you can become a patron. It's dead easy. It's dead straightforward, and it only costs you minimum $2 a month. So there's nothing in it at all. If you want to listen to the full version, you can do it over there. If you're happy with the shortened version in this instance, good on you. Because it's all the good bits. Oops. Anyway, what's next then, Rich?
Okay, next up, we're doing our favourite bit for everyone, the Of The Weekend Awards. Now, there's obviously been quite a bit where we haven't covered, so hopefully we can do it through the awards. But first up, let's say the Rodolfo Gonzalez Driver of the Weekend.
Strong pronunciation.
I can try it with an accent, but it'd probably be, you know, like the whole Italian national anthem situation.
We should just say I had a real issue ordering Callum's drink earlier because he produced some name I'd never heard of before, and then I said it, and apparently it's French, but we're not sure because it's distilled in London. It was a gin. I mean, you wanted gin and lemonade, didn't you, Callum? But it was, I can't remember again. Tanqueray. But was it French or was it English? Tanqueray.
Well, I think the company was founded by Charles Tanqueray, or Charles Tanqueray, depending on where he's from. I don't actually know.
Okay. Charles Tanqueray.
But it is a London gin, so I'm going to go with Tanqueray.
Tanqueray. All right. Anyway, carry on.
This has turned into a gin podcast. I like it.
We should do that.
As long as we get free testers. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so yeah, Driver of the Weekend. Who are you going to go for?
I think I know which one everyone else is going to go for, so I think I might actually veer away from that option. But I'm going to go with Lance Stroll.
Do you know what? I can actually say that is a good shout. It's remarkable that we can say good things about Stroll again. Was it fourth place he got in the end? Fourth place.
Lance Stroll finished fourth? Did he?
Fourth place. He was, at one point, he was leading the race for about a lap, but then he came into the pits for new tyres.
He does have it in him, but
he didn't come into the pits because Verstappen just cruised past him.
For
about half the lap.
Yeah.
And then he got caught on the back straight.
I cannot wait to see this race, by the way. What a f***ing ridiculous race. Lance Stroll finished fourth. Is that his best? That's not his best, though. Has he been on...
It's not his best. He's been on the podium before.
Baku, yeah. Hell.
So I heard some team radio and he said he wanted to be on the podium, but he said, oh, this will have to do. So, I mean, fourth place, I don't think the team will be complaining after they were the first retirement.
Yeah.
But good drive.
With Stroll, is that his one-lap pace generally isn't great, shown by the fact that I think this was the first time since Japan last year that he was actually out of Q1. Even in the racing point, which isn't that bad over a lap, as Perez has shown on a few occasions, it can be all right. But his sort of where he really comes to the fore is on his race pace. He's been very consistent. Generally, can make the strategy work quite well. A couple of examples that really spring to mind would be, I think it was Mexico in 2017, where his qualifying that wasn't that great, but his strategy got him into a good position, and he was, I think, ahead of one of the more sort of main drivers and was holding him up. And this was pretty much the same story again, in that a remarkable strategy call got him into a position where he had the position and didn't sort of only really needed to do what he did best, which was keep his head, which is in itself quite remarkable for someone who's, I think, 20, 21 years old, and just not commit mistakes. And arguably he did make a small mistake that ended up letting Kvyat pass, but his pace was searingly quick anyway, so that kind of felt like if he was not going to make that mistake and keep Kvyat behind, it was just going to be a stay of execution. But in the end he was very consistent, very reliable, and steered his way through the carnage where others have fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, he did the important thing, kept it on the track at the right time, and I think once again he deserves his nickname of the walking weapon, so we'll give him that crown back. Dan, what about you? Who's your driver of the weekend?
I think Daniel Kvyat for me. Yeah, he did a solid job, had some pace, kept it on the track. Yeah, yeah, good job.
He did. And one guy I would like to give a shout to is Vettel as well. He started last, 20th, through engine issue or something, it seemed to be, or turbo problem. So yeah, he started last, 20th position, and he finished second. Now obviously a lot was made last year about Hamilton starting 14th and winning the race in similar conditions for half the race, you might say. I'm gonna go and probably say that that drive was potentially better than Hamilton's. Okay, he didn't win the race, but to start at the back and make your way through, and the way that Vettel's been driving recently as well, he stayed out of trouble. Pretty much, he had a few moments off track, especially the last lap, I think, on the pretty much the last stadium section. But he managed to get second place, and he had a good result. And I think he needs that for his own confidence.
How many cars finished this race?
13.
11. 13. Jesus.
Let's find out.
It was Russell was 11th, and there was two Alphas. Yeah, 13.
It says 14 classified because Gasly was crashed close to the end, but he didn't finish the race, let's be honest.
Fair play. Carry on.
Next up, Team Lotus, Team of the Weekend. Who are we going to go for, Dan?
Ooh. Oh, it's difficult because for most teams, one driver was pretty good and the other one's pretty dire. So, Toro Rosso for me. I think Toro Rosso.
Yep, Toro Rosso, totally agree. I was expecting you to drop the W-bomb, the Williams in there. But no, Toro Rosso, great. I mean, third and sixth, that's potentially one of their best results ever, I imagine.
Well, it's only their second podium. And also, the podium was comprised of Red Bull Academy drivers, and it's the only podium so far that was made up of solely Red Bull Academy drivers.
That's correct. The Springles are on stat four.
That's fact of Factoids. The week, let's say. Fact of the week. We're going to hashtag that now. That's going to be NRF1 fact of the week.
You can do that, Rich.
I'll do that. Callum, what about you? Who's your team of the weekend?
I think I'll hand him a pink slip and go for Racing Point. Pretty much purely because of that strategy call that got Stroll into such a strong position.
Yeah, Dan even alluded to it. I can't even speak now.
Shout out for Honda, team of the week.
Honda?
Team of the week, that would be my shout.
Honda?
I've not seen any of it, but yeah.
Honda as an engine. Yeah. Good. Yeah, they're a good result. Next up, Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. There's quite a few to choose from here.
There's a few candidates.
Where should we start? Go on, guys. Pick one.
Lewis Hamilton, just for the fishing.
You're going to get some anger from that now. That was it. The man Lewis Hamilton fans love to hate. So that's going to come back.
Fishing for comments. What was the Twitter handle again?
Oh, Callum's going fishing.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Bit slow, Mike.
So you use bait to go fishing.
I thought you meant he'd gone fishing. I was very confused.
I didn't describe him as a fisherman. Anyway.
I'm going to go for Valtteri Bottas. Couldn't even overtake Lance Stroll and binned it whilst trying to do so. So,
It's not very often you hear the words, struggle to overtake Lance Stroll, is it? Let's be fair. But for me, I've got a real gripe on this one. Hülkenberg, who's having a great race. He was up in second at one point. I think it was after the safety car, Verstappen was leading, he was second. And it looked at another time where you look at Hülkenberg in a strong position, he's driving well, it's home Grand Prix as well, and you think, this guy could be on for his first podium, he could finally get it. And then he had the same fate as Hamilton and Leclerc, and he just went straight off into that wall, pretty much last corner, wasn't it? Just before the last corner on that drag strip runoff. And it's just, once again, it's an easy mistake in the wet to make when you've got 1,000 horsepower underneath you and everything.
But always makes it. That's why he hasn't got a podium. He's a brilliant driver, but it's just something about him in a Formula One car that he just cannot seize an opportunity when it smacks him in the face. It was the same in Baku a few years ago. Just blew it.
Yeah, he was driving to wall.
2012 as well. That was another one. But then you
have to take off. Carry on.
We could add all these up, and there's been so many times he could have, got podiums if not race wins. And for that is my Maldonado, I'm afraid. but otherwise he was on for a good result. Poor guy. Hutenberg, I think, is what we might get to know him as. So, and our last moment of the weekend, the Giuliano Salvi moment of the weekend. So there's a lot to choose from. What have we got?
I guess our moments of the weekend are generally positive, but I'm going to highlight a safety issue this weekend. So when Leclerc went off, and as he was walking away, Hamilton went into the barrier not so far along from him as Leclerc was walking away.
On the circuit?
Yeah, on the circuit. Not behind any safety barriers or anything. So I'm going to put that down as a moment of the weekend to highlight some safety problem.
Jeez.
Yes. Yes, that was a big thing actually, because you watch the race and we've picked up recently the crowd have been really, when something happens you can hear them cheering. I remember last year when Vettel went off at the Sachs curve, he, you know, binned it in the wall. You could hear the crowd cheering just before he went in. And this time I was watching the race and you see Leclerc out of his car and you think, feel sorry for him. And he's hear this cheer and I see him waving to the crowd thinking, oh, they're cheering him, waving credit to them. And next thing you see, it cuts to Hamilton, who's also in the wall, and it's like, wait a second. And it's like you say, it's like, I didn't even realise that was it until the, you know, the crowd were wrong. I thought, oh yeah, it's just an appreciation, you know, well done. And at least Leclerc was down, he was waving to the crowd, but no, he went off. And that's a big thing to highlight.
I think maybe they should start thinking about employing the same rules as Formula E, because when there's a crash in Formula E, they're instructed to stay in the car until otherwise told to do so. So, yeah, I think that's something the FIA need to look at and address, because that was quite a dangerous moment there.
Yeah, that's something that, was it Fuji in 2007 or 8 maybe? I think there was a lot of cars, was it first corner going off? And there was just a car park, I think. There were, you know, 6, 7, maybe 8 cars.
Maybe Nürburgring 07.
Is that Nürburgring?
Yeah, so that was when the first corner, because it's there's a dip in right in the middle.
Down, yes, that was the one. There was a car park of, you know, 6, 7 cars, wasn't there? And it was that moment, if someone tried to get out and there's another car coming in, you don't want to be near it.
Times that they had cars going off that were nudging or nearly hitting the tractor.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And all the marshals that would have been around it at that time. Right now, you'd say that's just crazy.
Yeah, nuts. They need to sort something out with that, definitely. Otherwise, any other moment of the weekend you got, Callum?
I don't mean to put a bit of a downer on it, but also perhaps a negative one for me, purely because there were so many positive ones. But the thing with Lewis Hamilton is he's very, very hyped up by certain sections of supporters, probably largely because of the social media age that we live in. There are people that just sort of idolise him and treat him literally almost as a god. And then you go and get things like,
you go and get things like a train that comes and interrupts you talking about Formula One, for goodness sake.
You go and get things where just happens, and some of it's his fault completely, some of it's arguably not, to a degree. And he completely throws a hissy fit and says, oh, I want to give up, I want to get out, retire the car and go home. How on earth you can say someone like that is the GOAT or the greatest of all time? I think if you do, you probably need to give your head a wobble.
I feel like as well with Hamilton, what didn't help, there was a lot of talk, you know, he was unwell, he had cold-like symptoms and things, and he was talking about not racing, and he still got in the car and went for it. And I just think maybe if he's talking about, let's retire the car, it's kind of, other words, him saying, I don't want to be driving this anymore, I just want to get in bed. That's what I'd be. I don't think if I was had a horrible cold, I think I'd just stay in bed.
Yeah, you could argue that, but there's also been previous evidence that as soon as he's not in a position to do well or win, he always throws a bit of a hissy fit and goes, can we retire, please?
Yeah,
he's done that. 2014 was one of those examples.
Yeah, I think it was, actually.
And did he retire in that race? I can't actually remember.
He was calling for retirement for a long time. Yeah. It was several, and they were, you know, like, there could be something on for us here, keep going. And but yeah, he was talking about retiring for a long time.
The thing is, when people like Michael Schumacher have so clearly had a massive effect on the way that drivers go racing in this age, when his mantra was, you never, ever, ever give up, to hear things like that is quite disheartening and distasteful, really.
Yeah, we need a bit of Churchill spirit in Hamilton, maybe. Never ever give it.
I'd sway away from Churchillian, but still. For God's sake, like when your engineer tells you we can get something out of this, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't trust them. And he was right in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he got back into the points and he got more points than he was looking for because of Alfa Romeo. So, yeah, he did that. So, finally, for...
Any other ones? Is that it? Because I wanted to mention, and again, I haven't seen any of the race, but I did see on social media that all the drivers got stuck in the lift at some point. Yeah. Which struck me as hilarious. I don't know what happened there. I mean, obviously they all got out, but much hilarity.
Yeah, I did see a post of that. It looked, I mean, how much would you pay to be stuck in that lift as well?
I don't know, they probably all smell.
Maybe not.
They probably smell immaculate.
Well, maybe. There's a lot of ego in a lift, though, isn't it? Anyway, carry on. Rate the race.
Final step. We've probably missed a lot from the German Grand Prix, but there was too much to talk about to fit into one pod. So finally, to rate the race, where would you rate it? I think the last race was... Britain, which isn't down.
No, we're sorry, that's my fault. We're quite a lot short. But what was before Britain?
Austria
was the best race of the season, I think it was given, possibly.
You disagree with that being so low.
So the ratings aren't there because these are last year's.
The previous ones.
Yeah, I haven't done them.
Can we do two things for this? Because I feel like giving it an arbitrary rating is one thing. But where does it actually stack up in races of the decade?
All right, well, so what we're saying is, just for administration purposes, you'd say probably give it 0.5% better than any other race this season because best race?
I think two individual sort of metrics, one for where it ranks in this season based on the arbitrary measure of it's a 14 or whatever.
Okay.
Or then the other one of being, I think it's better than... X iconic race since 2010 or whenever.
Right. So, we'll just go round. Best race of the season so far?
Yeah, I mean, we rate these out of 11. I would say 11. I'd give it 11 out of 11.
I don't know what the other ratings are, so we'll just say yes.
Yes, best race of the season so far.
Yes. Yeah, quite comfortably.
All right. And then Callum's question.
And yeah, so of all time races, where would you place it then, Callum?
Well, if we think about what it's actually up against, you'd probably include in that Canada 2011 quite easily.
Definitely.
Arguably Canada 2010 as well. From 2012, there were some pretty phenomenal races.
The finale, Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an astonishing race.
Spa 1998.
That's your go-to race.
Bahrain 2014 was also pretty mega for other reasons. There's Hungary 15, Baku 2017. And that's
Brazil,
probably the contenders.
2016. Verstappen in the wet. Passes around the outside, turn 3, I'd say.
To be fair, I'd probably whistle it down to Canada 2011 because I'm biased.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
See, I would say this race, I wouldn't say it was the best of all time. I think there's been better, but I think it's got to be in the top 10, thinking of all the races which we've had, you know, even through the 70s and 80s, which probably none of us really remember. Bound to be some good ones.
Going through having not seen the race, I guess the question is it better than Baku 2017? I think that seems like the most logical in terms of the carnage and all this stuff I haven't seen that's happened. Was it better than that race? Because that's probably the benchmark for that sort of race in the last decade.
I think it probably was, because one thing I found quite monotonous about that sort of era was the Vettel-Hamilton side of things. So there wasn't really a lot of bite between them, and it was all quite cordial up until that moment, I suppose. But to be honest, I feel like this race probably had a bit more. It was certainly cleaner, and there was a lot less sort of fervent debate about and sort of partiality, I guess. I forget the word that I actually need for this, but still. Sort of tribalism of my driver is right, your driver is wrong. There was none of that here. It was just marvelling at the racing that we got. So for that reason, I'd probably just about edge this one ahead of Baku.
Either way, we know it was a phenomenal race, and yeah, it's going to be a while until we get another one like that. Okay, and as it's back-to-back races, we're going to keep one pod, so straight on to Hungary. And just quickly, Michael, what is this circuit to you?
Camel on a surfboard.
Camel on a surfboard.
No, it's a surfboard, yeah, surfboard, yeah. Yeah.
Every time. And if you're not sure, I think look back on social media. I think there's a recording of Ped from a couple of seasons ago with a nice image to help you, you know, really imagine what that looks like. But let's go straight into it. Hungary, last race before the mid-season summer break. Who's it the most important race for, Callum?
I feel like maybe out of the top sort of major drivers, I'd probably say Charles Leclerc, being one that sort of made critical mistakes in races that he could have arguably won in the last three races. And we talk about Verstappen, but quite equally Leclerc could have been the one sort of in the spotlight in that regard. And to be honest, it's probably not going to be a great track for Ferrari, so to make the absolute most of it and maybe overachieve is something that would be not necessarily a confidence booster, because I don't really think he needs it, but sort of a reminder that he is super talented and clearly one of the very, very best ones to look out for in the future.
Yeah. What about you, Dan?
I'd say Bottas and perhaps Mercedes combined, as Michael sort of alluded to earlier on. Having to bounce back from such a disastrous finish, perhaps not such a disastrous start, but they're going to need to take some momentum into the mid-season break. And Bottas particularly, seeing as I think it was quoted over the weekend that this and the next couple of races are going to be quite crucial for his contract negotiations, so yeah, I think he's going to have to really, really concentrate, put his foot down and get a result. So yeah,
I think he said he wanted his contract to be sorted out by August, and if you look at the calendar, this is the last one before the end of August. So I think Spa falls on something like the 1st of September, I think, on race day. So this is pretty much last chance if he actually wants to stick to that deadline. Yeah. Although he didn't last year, so yeah.
He'll change his mind. He'll change that. Tell you what, let's wait until October.
What about you, Michael? Any ideas, obviously, from our understanding from this race?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think Mercedes, definitely. And I can't think of anyone else, really. George, he needs to, if he gets an opportunity, he needs to take it ahead of Bobby K. Why not?
Definitely. I think, to be honest, I think you could almost say all three top teams, because obviously we discussed Mercedes. Obviously, Callum, you mentioned Leclerc as well. And of course, Red Bull, can they, you know, really keep kicking on, especially Gasly? Because, Gasly's had some disastrous weekends recently, and he needs to pull something out, because there's obviously a lot of talk about him being replaced. But we shall see. Let's go straight in. Let's do some predictions. Who wants to go first?
We'll go around and do one each, shall we, first?
One each.
So, again, having not seen the last race, I reckon Mercedes will bounce back, and I reckon Lewis will win the race, and it'll be bang. There you go. Focus back.
I think Ferrari are going to come out fighting. I'm going to say Ferrari will be on pole position.
I'm going to say a double no-points finish for Haas.
Race of carnage, and no mention of Romain Grosjean, by the way. Stayed well clear of all that, didn't he?
Well, he... To be fair...
I've seen the race.
Both Hasses...
Hassai. Hassers.
Both of them were in the points. They were 7th and 8th, I think. And there was quite a moment where they did bang wheels, and both of them were straight on the radio to shout at the other one.
I've watched all of the Drive to Survive series now, which was brilliant, by the way. I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it got better as it went along. They're a good pair. I like those two. Anyway, predictions. Time's running.
Yeah, what did we say? You said Haas. Something about Haas, I've forgotten.
Yeah, double no score for Haas.
I was going to say Hamilton will win the race, but actually, I remember one quote from it's Toto Wolff over the weekend, saying that despite the updates on the Mercedes getting their cooling issues sorted out, that Ferrari are actually faster in the corners for once. So I'm actually going to go for a Ferrari win.
Well,
that's a bold shout, that one.
We will find out soon enough, though. I think that'll be it for now. We're going to add in the rest of the predictions.
Let's do them now. Patreon. So we'll do them now for the big pod. And those who are listening for free will have to imagine.
Well, those who are listening for free will, if they really want to know, they'll have to head to patreon.com/NRF1 and,
you know it.
And get involved.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's it. I think we're done, aren't we?
We are. And we are done.
We are done. And we will return with E250.
250.
250.
That's a landmark. Quarter of a century. Quarter of a millen. Quarter of a thousand.
Millennium.
Yeah.
Quarter of millennium. Cool. That hasn't taken us that long either. E250. And that will be a Hungary review. So I hope we will see you then. And yeah, if you want to listen to more, listen back. Get on Patreon, do everything you can. Until next time, it's goodbye once again from the crew, which is going to seem weird calling Michael and the crew.
Cheers, Rich. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. It's weird being in the hot seat.
Well done. You did a good job, mate. Well done.
Thank you. It's weird. And yeah, thank you. Goodbye, Dan, Callum.
See you later. Off you the scene.
Oof. And goodbye from me. And here's to a brilliant Hungarian Grand Prix next up this weekend. Let's hope it will be at least another good one. Goodbye.
I think we missed out on Hungary Fun. And we're hungry for more.